AM Amory and WBZH 910 AM W245CT Hayward. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Find out what's going on in the world, the state, and in your own backyard. This is a Civic Media Network News Update.
It's 5 o'clock. Good afternoon. I'm Terry Bell, and here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A top official in Wisconsin state government is on administrative leave. No one's saying why, since the investigation into Senate Chief Clerk Michael Queensland is still underway. The Journal Sentinel reports Queensland's access to state buildings was revoked on August 23rd. The chief clerk is a nonpartisan post that oversees administration and record keeping for the Senate. The chief clerk also serves as the Senate's parliamentarian and chief operating officer. State lawmakers are moving to keep the state's top high school graduates in Wisconsin. Nate Wegehout reports.
A bill would guarantee every student in Wisconsin who graduates in the top 5% of their senior class admission to a UW school. Representative Jerry O'Connor.
The bottom line is that we are losing too many of our best and brightest high school graduates to neighboring colleges and universities. And is this not a form of institutionalized brain drain for Wisconsin?
The bill got a hearing before the Assembly Colleges and Universities Committee today. Authors of the bill also say race and gender should not be considerations in UW admissions. Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
A new package of bills in the State Assembly seeks to improve conditions for workers in Wisconsin. Representative Katrina Shankland says the package would not only help workers, but Wisconsin's labor shortage, too.
I think any time you raise wages and give workers a voice in the workplace, you're going to have workers want to go to that workplace.
The Workers' First Labor Package is 10 bills. Among other things, they would restore collective bargaining for public employees and set up a uniform prevailing wage. The federal government is negotiating with drug makers to lower the cost of 10 prescription drugs for people on Medicare. Senator Tammy Baldwin says she thinks drug makers will lower the cost of those drugs for all Americans.
When we did that, a number of the companies that manufacture insulin said they were going to lower prices for everybody, not just those on Medicare. So I think that's the sort of ripple effect and influence that we will see with these other 10 drugs.
But many drug makers are suing. Instead, they say the negotiations amount to unconstitutional price controls. The suspect in a brutal beating and assault in downtown Madison is charged with 3 felonies. Brandon Thompson made his initial appearance in court today. Thompson's bail is $1 million. Thompson has a degree in criminal justice from UW-Milwaukee and has no serious crimes on his record. The victim is a University of Wisconsin student who was beaten nearly to death. She's in the hospital and police say she has a long recovery ahead. And that's what Wisconsin needs to know. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. After a 16-year-old boy was fatally injured at work over the summer, a northern Wisconsin sawmill will have to pay nearly $200,000 in fines and take steps to comply with child labor laws. Florence Hardwoods reportedly employed at least 9 children between the ages of 14 and 17 and illegally allowed them to operate dangerous machinery. Labor officials also found 7 were allowed to work outside legally permitted hours, and one of the children was injured on 2 separate occasions. Wisconsin State Senator Brad Pfaff and State Representative Robin Vining have reintroduced a bill intended to support small businesses. The bill would create an online portal for Wisconsin residents to access information related to starting, maintaining, and growing a small business. The portal would feature information on economic development programs, bidding opportunities for government contracts for small businesses, and networking opportunities. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
The Packers get back one of the receivers. Good afternoon, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Yesterday at practice, both Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs were missing from the practice field, listed on the injury report with hamstring injuries. But today, after 2 weeks, Doubs was back. It looks a lot better that he could play Sunday at 3:25 against the Bears at Soldier Field. Head coach Matt LaFleur asked, what will it take to get Jordan Love in a rhythm Sunday with his wide receivers?
Any time that you can string together a few completions, that typically builds the confidence up a little bit. So whether how you do it, There's a lot of different ways. It could be taking a shot down the field. It could be throwing a screen. But yeah, I think that's important to try to do, to get them in the flow of the game. And I think typically you do that just by getting more plays. So whether, even if it's running the football and you get some first downs, but you got to string together a few plays to help really everybody get into a rhythm.
Last week was that report that the Packers were in bidding for Jonathan Taylor, the disgruntled running back from the Indianapolis Colts. Packers running back A.J. Dillon asked about that story.
That's the nature of the business, isn't it? I'm not naive to think that, you know, when draft time comes around, if there was, the shoe was flipped on the other foot or whatever, however that saying goes, you're trying to make your team as good as you can. So I don't know what the necessarily truth to that is or who was whatever, but all that outside stuff, that doesn't bother me. I'm here right now. I'm suiting up. I'm wearing 28 for the Green Bay Packers. So, I'm fired up to get it going week one.
College football, the Wisconsin Badgers remain ranked number 19th in the nation, one of four Big Ten teams in the AP's top 25 this week. The Badgers are on the road Saturday night against Washington State, game time at 6:30. Head coach Luke Fickell on how he has to prepare his team for their first road trip together.
Specific things, offensive and defense, that you have to do to be successful on the road is critical.
With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Thursday edition. That makes it Friday Eve up in here. Woo-hoo! Playing hardball. Dom, we got a fine journalist in the lobby. He will join us very soon. He is Patrick Marley from the Washington Post. We've known him for a number of years. He was with the Journal Sentinel, and his beat has been Wisconsin state politics for a long time.
A lot to talk about there.
And his colleague at the Washington Post, columnist Jennifer Rubin, her submission today, and the biggest reason we got Patrick joining us in like 15 minutes, Wisconsin GOP entertains a constitutional crisis. Again. That's Rubin's headline. Now, you, the fair listener, you know much of this story, but we're going to rehash a little bit for Dom's shady memory and a few of you.
Tell him once, tell him twice, and tell him again, Curdy. This is a very important issue, and it's all over the national news.
Wisconsin Republicans received a drubbing in April when progressive judge Janet Protasiewicz won the election to fill the swing seat on the state Supreme Court, giving progressives a 4-3 majority. Oh, that was a sweet night, Dom. Indeed, Republicans lost by 11 points, a virtual landslide in this evenly divided swing state, should have curbed their appetite for radical gerrymandering and 19th century abortion bans, both of which were front and center in the race. Now, however, Republicans threatened to countermand the voter's choice and send the state towards a constitutional standoff. I think we're well on our way, Dom. Republicans are openly talking about impeaching Protasiewicz before she has heard a single case. That's in italics here, Dom. Led by right-wing Radical Assembly Speaker Robin Foss, that's a good descriptor, Republicans accuse Protasiewicz of prejudging redistricting cases pending before the Supreme Court because of comments she made during her campaign. However, as the Associated Press reported, she never promised a rule one way or another, although she observed the lines were unfair and rigged. Well, that's just observable, Dom, but I'm going to keep reading here from Rubin. Republicans also claim she must recuse herself because she accepted money from the Democratic Party. She has promised to do so in any case in which the party is a litigant in the redistricting case. The Democratic Party is not a litigant. But Dom, Republicans have threatened to move forward unless she recuses herself from the case, challenging the redistricting lines. And because Wisconsin limits impeachment to cases of corruption or commission of a crime, neither of which apply here, this would be a blatant misuse of the Constitution, a usurpation of judicial powers, and a violation of the separation of powers, or a Thursday, as we call it here in Wisconsin. And here's the kicker. If the assembly moves to impeach her, she will be automatically disqualified from ruling until the state Senate trial, even absent any evidence of misconduct, making this all the more reprehensible. I think that's been the plan all along. Vote in the assembly and leave her on the back burner for as long as you can. Wisconsin Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu, a Republican, has said the chamber would not consider acting on Protasiewicz. CNN reported if the Senate does nothing, the court would be deadlocked 3-3. However, as CNN reported, if the assembly votes to impeach the justice and the Senate were to convict and remove her from office, Democratic Governor Tony Evers would appoint her replacement. And if she is removed and the governor appoints replacement before December 1st, the justice would be up for election on the GOP presidential primary date in April, when GOP turnout will be at its highest.
Crudy Rubin continues at the Washington Post, dealing a setback to Republicans, a state judiciary disciplinary panel, after reviewing her comments, the Judicial Code of Ethics, state Supreme Court rules, and relevant decisions by the state and U.S. Supreme Courts on Tuesday rejected several complaints lodged against Protasiewicz that alleged she violated the Judicial Code of Ethics for comments she made during the campaign. Interestingly, the panel cited a federal case in Wisconsin that ruled there is a distinction between a candidate stating personal views during a campaign and making a pledge, promise, or commitment to ruling a certain way. Indeed, as the New York Times reported, Republican justices have said comments comparing homosexuality to bestiality, calling Planned Parenthood a wicked organization, such as those made by Justice Brian Hagedorn, don't require recusal in gay rights or abortion matters. It is also noteworthy that Wisconsin Republicans have repeatedly rejected efforts to set recusal standards, leaving the decision to justices' discretion. The impeachment scheme is indicative of Republicans' refusal to accept the results of elections that don't go their way. And for the CJs out there, I'll just repeat that again. Jennifer Rubin, the former conservative, perhaps still, but not a Trumper. The impeachment scheme the Wisconsin Republicans are considering is indicative of Republicans' refusal to accept the results of elections that don't go their way. They seem to believe that no Democrat, no matter what voters say, can legitimately exercise power. House Republicans are contemplating a similar baseless impeachment of President Biden, Rubin notes. State Democratic Party Chairman Ben Wickler, in a Tuesday evening news conference, denounced what amounts to extortion aimed at the justice simply doing her job. As he pointed out, even the threat of impeachment could cause judges to look over their shoulder, wary of antagonizing the Republican majority legislature. He also announced a full court press to head off the impeachment stunt, including a $4 million initiative from the party and allied groups to sound the alarm, with a particular emphasis on Republican state senators whose constituents voted for the justice in April. Under the banner Defend Justice, Democrats are initiating a multi-pronged statewide campaign to hold Wisconsin legislative Republicans accountable for their unconstitutional, anti-democratic threat to impeach Justice Janet Protasiewicz. Democrats plan digital ads, voter outreach, and public events to inform voters that Republicans are attempting to win through legislative extortion what they couldn't win at the polls, and urging them to contact their state representatives. Wickler, in a phone interview with me, Jennifer Rubin, on Wednesday, said, "This isn't a Democratic moment or a Republican moment. It's a rule of law moment." He urged Republicans who don't want to see the party walk off a cliff to speak up now. In a positive sign, Paul Bucher, B-U-C-H-E-R, a Republican with 22 years as the Waukesha County District Attorney, told the New York Times, "It's absurd. This jump to impeachment, that's just what we do today to people who we don't like in office." Yeah. Ain't that the truth? Nothing short of the rule of law, the system of checks and balances, and the sanctity of elections, plus the future of Wisconsin's abortion rights, gerrymandering, and certification of the 2024 presidential race, which the state Supreme Court could adjudicate in a case of dispute. Nothing short of those things is at issue. Jennifer Rubin at the Washington Post. Man.
844-967-2789. Now I'm going to set some ground rules, CJ. If you can't stay on topic, I'm hanging up immediately. So play along or get lost. CJ, welcome back to the Devil's Advocates. Where do you stand on the impeachment of Janet Protasiewicz? That's the topic we're talking about here. What do you think?
Well, I guess I got to comment on that topic because
yes,
you'll start calling me names going. Because
stay on topic. Stay on topic, CJ.
Name caller.
Here we go.
Right? Call me names. Maybe she shouldn't voice her the way she's going to vote on issues and take money.
She didn't.
From the Democrat
she didn't
Party.
Say how she was going to vote on the issue, CJ. She
did.
Didn't say that.
She used her First Amendment rights. She said the maps were unfair and rigged. Those are the specific quotes we see over and over again.
She's going to vote for the maps?
No, in probability, she would vote against the existing maps, just like Dan Kelly would have voted for the existing maps. The voters of Wisconsin had a clear choice, and they made it. They're voting against rigged maps, CJ, by voting in Protasiewicz.
You know, I note the caller that called before me. She actually defined her as a woman. And, you know, I'm very happy to hear that she, you know, is able to do that because our new Supreme Court justice can't. But, you know, I love the fact that, you know, we're actually, I guess, you know, it's hardball. And the Democrats have proven that they can lie and cheat better than the Republicans.
Give an example.
I don't see it, CJ. So let me hang on. I understand your objection, and I want to get your opinion. Your claim is that since Janet Protasiewicz gave an opinion that she thought the maps were unfair, that the maps were rigged, is grounds for her recusal from any case. Now, I would disagree with that. But now my question to you, CJ, Dan Kelly, he claimed that the maps were constitutional. If Dan Kelly won and was the justice on the conservative majority Supreme Court, would you want Dan Kelly to recuse himself because he said the maps were constitutional?
They were constitutional at that time.
But is that so opinion, or is he prejudging the case?
It's only
is
constitutional if the court rules it.
Constitutional until it's constitutional until they're changed.
Well, when I was
not, you voted for that, and abortion is how Protasiewicz got in.
Yeah, people disagree herself. With you, CJ, and the Republicans,
yep.
And it's killing the Wisconsin GOP and nationally as well. They're going to continue to lose on it.
Isn't
CJ.
The will of Wisconsin voters supposed to be the law of the land here, CJ?
We're not going to lose because our first woman president is coming, and she knows how to deal.
First woman president.
We tried. Right? We'd get a good faith effort. Decent faith effort.
You mean with CJ? I feel less than compassionate. We're never going to change his mind. He's not great company. But you're welcome to call each and every day, CJ. We know you do. 844-967-2789. If this guy only had a people meter, we would be golden. Dan, we got a fine guest. We are golden. Patrick Marley from the Washington Post. He's kind of a big deal. His beat, Wisconsin politics. And it's going to be hardball up in here the next couple months, years, lifetimes, generations. When's it been a slow day in Wisconsin? It's been a while. Come back. Patrick Marley and the Devil's Advocates.
Come on, baby. Run crazy. Mr. Rank, this is great balls of fire.
Wisconsin traditions have been built for years around the Badgers, game day, and the mascot. But lead miners are the original badgers in the state, not the animal or the mascot. It was the 1820s, and the miners often didn't have shelter in the winters, so they lived like badgers by digging tunnels into the hillsides to stay warm and sleep where they worked. It led to the reason why today you really can't think of Wisconsin without thinking badgers. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
The Todd Alba Show.
I see the silhouette of Todd Alba, who still hasn't figured out that maybe a TV person could help, you know, set this whole thing up.
For whatever reason, yeah. StreamYard's video is just deciding that the room is too bright.
When has Todd Alba been accused of being too bright? I mean, really there. I'm like, where's Aaron with the rim shot?
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Here's your updated forecast. Partly cloudy tonight with a low of 43. Northeast winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. High temperatures reach up to 73 tomorrow. Sunny skies. Lows level off around 51 tomorrow night. Mainly clear skies. Upper 70s Saturday with a chance for scattered storms. Turning much cooler Sunday with highs in the upper 60s. Storms continue. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air, WLAK, 1260 AM. Right now, 62.
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. At 10, As Goes Wisconsin. Then at noon, Civic Media Network News. On Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
Think you know politics? Think again. Welcome to the Devil's Advocates.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. If you miss any of this fine program, go to civicmedia.us, click on the Shows tab, track down Devil's Advocates. You can listen to podcasts and interviews.
Dominic, this show getting better right now. We got a fine guest here in the Madison studios, WMDX. He is Patrick Marley. He is a journalist with the Washington Post. This is where he lives. This is his beat, the state of Wisconsin. Patrick, welcome to the Solidarity Realty, the we like to think of as the Devil's Advocate studio. Welcome, sir.
Thank you for having
Patrick.
Me.
Now, Patrick, we've known you for a number of years. You were with the Journal Sentinel out of Milwaukee for a number of years. And while we offer opinion each and every day, we try to quote sources. And you might be the most quoted source over the history of the Devil's Advocate show.
I don't know.
Congratulations.
This state politics, this has been your beat for how long?
Let's see. I started the Journal Sentinel in 2004. So it's coming on 20 years, 19 years.
19 wow. years. We're working on 13 ourselves.
Very good.
Very good. Patrick, does any of what's happening now with the threatened impeachment of Justice Janet Protasiewicz, any of this surprising to you in this current political environment?
Is it surprising? I mean, I guess one thing that I have enjoyed about covering Wisconsin politics all this time is that you're always in for a surprise, and we are in a surprising place. This is not an expected turn. I knew there would be a huge fight over her taking office, once she took office, because it's a huge shift on the Supreme Court. The conservatives have controlled it for 15 years. And when she got elected in April, we knew that we'd see a total change in the way they approach cases. And there's high profile cases, as we know, there are these redistricting cases, an abortion case could come soon. So you knew there'd be a big push to get her to recuse from those cases because of the comments she made during the race. I don't know that I saw impeachment coming, especially not, just weeks into her time on the court.
Little or no criterion yet for impeachment, let's just say. Patrick, do you, we read a opinion column, I believe, from the Cap Times today, and it suggested that perhaps the courts were politicized first with the Butler-Gableman race. Did you see a shift, any change? The example, I believe, was the financial support of these outside groups really came into the court race at that time. Is that when we saw some shift in Wisconsin politics?
Yeah, I think that's a key moment. there's sort of an early glimmer of what was to come in court races in Wisconsin a year prior when Annette Ziegler first ran. That was 2007, I believe. And that's when you first saw these races start to take on the kind of money that you would see in a, you know, congressional race or a really big legislative race or a minor statewide race, a political race. And then it really intensified with the Gableman-Butler race because the stakes, again, at that time were for the majority. And you had an intensification of the rhetoric around it. And then it's just been, you know, not every cycle, it depends on race to race, but it's just getting more and more intense. And you saw that culminate in this year with a race that cost over $50 million, which is a stunning amount of money. I mean, that is, you know, I mean, that's not at gubernatorial levels, but that is a huge sum of money.
Is that, if I recall, Patrick Marley with the Washington Post here in the Madison studios, that was the greatest expenditure on a judicial race in American history. By
that's correct. Any state.
Blowing any it out of the water, though. It wasn't even close.
I think the previous example was from almost 20 years ago and was from Illinois, and I can't remember exactly, but maybe $15 million. So even accounting for inflation, this blows it out of the water. And, you know, Wisconsin is a relatively small state. If you're comparing it to California or Texas, we are far beyond what those states have spent on races. Actually, I don't know if California elects its judges, but at any rate, Texas does, and we're spending way more than
well,
that.
Even now, sort of intra-term, we're seeing a promised expenditure of the Democratic Party of the state of Wisconsin and other groups in support of Protasiewicz. Mm-hmm. I don't recall anyone ever putting $4 million behind a candidate who's already on the court, Patrick.
Yeah, you could say this is like an extension of the campaign beyond the you know, after the election period. And if impeachment really does happen, or they, you know, pursue an impeachment inquiry, we don't know what that would look like. But if they do that, you would imagine that, you know, the Democrats and the groups on their side, that's the starting point, that $4 million, that would go up. And of course, the Republicans are going to have to, even if they don't match it dollar for dollar, they're going to start spending in the thing too. So all of a sudden you have this political campaign without a race.
Before I let my buddy Dominic in here, and we'll give him a majority of the time in the next longer segment, we've got Patrick Marley from the Washington Post. I'm sure through the course of your life, you've had political friends of all different stripes. Do you find when you tell the stories of Wisconsin, do you find that if they're not watching closely, they're occasionally taken aback, surprised, shocked, even by the political means being utilized in this state?
Well, I mean, sure, but you find lots of, you know, you talk to people, even sometimes people from Wisconsin, and they're like, wait, Supreme Court. Well, first of all, sometimes they're like, we have a Supreme Court. And then they're like, and we elect them. I mean, it's just such a different system than you have at the federal level where they're appointed. So, you know, I think it remains true that people expect judicial races to be different than purely political races for Congress or the legislature. And they expect it to be this more, you know, high-minded discussion of things, not raw politics. But that is what it is turning into.
We talk about Borking. Once upon a time, Justice, or he could have been Justice Bork, but he never became Justice Bork because he told perhaps a little too much about himself. That was the way. It was very conservative. When we see court hearings on Capitol Hill in D.C., they don't ever tell us their opinions about much. That has changed as well, has it not, Patrick? We're short on time, but quick thoughts.
In terms of for political
judicial races here
well,
in
yeah,
Wisconsin.
If anything, though, it's changed. It used to be that candidates would not really tell you what their views are. Now they're starting to give more hints about what they think. They might not explicitly say it, but they say it in so many words oftentimes.
Patrick, I'd love to talk to you about recusal rules and maybe even give Dom an opportunity to say hi. Come back with us. Patrick Marley here in Madison, Washington Post reporter. We are the Devil's Advocates. Thursday, that makes it Friday Eve. So Dom's turn is next.
This summer,
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. 4 to 6, the Devil's Advocates with Tom Ankrut. Then at 6, the Maggie Dawn Show. WLAK.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. Former Trump advisor Peter Navarro found guilty of contempt of Congress for defying a subpoena from the House January 6th committee.
Sad day for America, not because they were guilty verdicts, because I can't come out and have an honest, decent conversation with the people of America.
Navarro's lawyer moving for a mistrial, claiming the jury exited the building before returning a verdict, but after seeing protesters outside. That 70s show actor Danny Masterson has been sentenced to 30 years to life in prison for raping two women. Police in eastern Pennsylvania believe convicted murderer Danilo Cavalcante is still near the prison where he escaped.
It's about an 8 to 10 square mile area that we're looking at right now.
Lieutenant Colonel George Bivens. United Auto Workers President Sean Fain says the union has rejected GM's latest pay raise offer. This is ABC News.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. A few Wisconsin airports will be able to upgrade their infrastructure after receiving funding from the Federal Aviation Administration. The Dane County Regional Airport, Trove Field, Appleton International Airport, and Rhinelander-Oneida County Airport received a combined $23.5 million from the FAA's Airport Improvement Program to upgrade infrastructure like reconstructing a taxiway, improving lighting and safety, or expanding a terminal. Top officials from the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families testified at a public hearing this week, stating recent Republican proposed child care bills are not sufficient. Those officials argued that the bills don't address the biggest challenge, which is getting people to want to work in the child care industry. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers has stated that he would prefer taking $365 million in the state funds to extend the federally funded Child Care Counts program. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
Experience Nightlight, September 8th and 9th from 5 until 10:30 p.m. Presented by Joy Engine. The dazzling spectacle is an immersive 4D light festival taking place in Milwaukee's historic Mitchell Street neighborhood. Digital animations, dance, music, art, and fashion combine to create a visual, family-friendly sensory experience outside of 710 West Historic Mitchell Street, home of Mitchell Street Arts. The event is family-friendly and free to the public. Don't miss this iconic event. Nightlight, where art comes to life. Information at joyengine.org. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
And apparently, Maggie Dawn, Big Newton lover of the Maggie Dawn Show.
I was so offended, Jane. You know how much I love and admire you. You're like my freaking radio hero. And then to hear you bash my Newton.
It's still bad.
You want the cakey part cakey. You want the jammy part jammy. That is like bringing me back.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Save the $2 on tomorrow's paper. Listen to the Devil's Advocates today.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, rolling through the Thursday Happier Happy Hour. We are happy because we got a fine guest. He is Patrick Marley, journalist with the Washington Post. He joins me here in the Madison studio, but I'm going to stop playing Monopoly, Dom. You get to roll now.
I know. I can see you, but I can't see Patrick. Patrick, hey, man, thanks for coming around. Great to talk to you once again. And literally, man, thank you for the reporting over the years. You know, Kurt and I get on the radio and talk a lot of trash and have some fun, but we have to go to sources. We have to find information and accurate information. And your journalism has been a source of that, as Crudy mentioned, for some time. Your colleagues, Molly Beck and Jesse Point, others here locally, certainly Jennifer Rubin nationally, we quoted her in the last hour. We've been reading her stuff, so thank you for that. But Patrick, I want to get a quick opinion before we get back into some of the issues of the day. Journalism in general, as you mentioned, you've been around for some time now. How have you seen it change with ownerships and funding and of course in the Trump administration, a lot of fake media kind of turning against journalism. How do you handle that as a profession, and how do you think the industry is doing these days?
Well, first of all, thanks for saying all those nice things. I appreciate that. Yeah. Journalism's in bad shape, especially for, mid-sized markets, smaller markets. I don't think a lot of people recognize the difficulties that newspapers are having for a variety of reasons, most of which is that people can get a lot of information for free on the internet. And it's not always, you get what you pay for. So sometimes you find some free things that are really interesting to read. They just happen to not be true. And so people have gotten out of the habit of paying for good quality information, which is what they need to do if they want to have a healthy democracy. Because we have to have, facts that everybody can agree on, and then they can dispute what the best thing to do about them is. And, right now we have a lot of people cannot agree on what reality is. And if you can't agree on what the facts are, then it's pretty hard to govern yourselves.
Patrick, the state of Wisconsin has mentioned a lot to talk about over the last 10 or 15 years. When you're out with your national press colleagues, and they know your beat in Wisconsin, I feel like we're always the center of things. Just because we live here and I'm, the kind of the ego guy, but I think like, man, it's like everything that happens here all of a sudden kind of starts, happening, popping up other places. What's the sense of Wisconsin as a political state with your colleagues in the media?
I mean, I think there's a recognition that it is one of, a couple of ground zeros in American politics. We have always been the swing state, or we have been for a couple of decades at least. And so we're in the middle of the action, and the overall playing field keeps shrinking, right? Wisconsin has remained this battleground, but others have fallen off. Florida isn't a battleground anymore. Ohio isn't anymore. Now, it is true that places like Georgia and Arizona have become new states that have to be closely watched, because that's where presidential elections are decided. But the overall number is smaller than it used to be. So if anything, Wisconsin's relevance has increased. I mean, it's pretty wild when you think about it. The last presidential election in Wisconsin was decided by 20,000 votes. The one before that was decided by 30,000 votes. And like, we're this key player in who the next president is. It's these tiny margins have outsized impact.
Well, and you have judicial races like Hagedorn Neubauer that came down to 5,600 votes.
Exactly, yes.
Here in the state of Wisconsin. Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates. We've got Patrick Marley, our fine guest from the Washington Post. I want to shout out Stein as well, though.
Absolutely.
You can't Brother not acknowledge your partner in crime for many years. I have my own partner in crime, anyways. Patrick, thank you for joining us here. The January 6th, you talk about the Wisconsin-centric nature of the news cycles and sometimes the political malfeasance, I would say. But the January 6th, in many ways, centered around the actions of what happened here in Madison and the failure to accept the outcome of Wisconsin's election. And that seemingly is still going on to this day. I mean, we've still got John Eastman visiting the assembly speaker trying to promote overturning elections that are years gone by, Patrick. Let's talk about the January 6th. What do you think Wisconsin's role is? Is it just because we're a swing state, or was there a particular emphasis on this state?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that we have in Wisconsin any more role than the other swing states. There were seven states in all where the, Trump electors claimed to have won the state, even though they had lost. Most of those are swing states. For some reason, New Mexico did this as well, even though I think Trump lost by 10 points there. But very close in Wisconsin, Georgia, Arizona, some of these other states where you had these people purporting to be electors. And there's different nuance from one state to the next. I don't know that Wisconsin has you know, that it wound up in that mix for any reason other than it was a very, very close state, and one where, you know, here we had this recount that went to the state Supreme Court that got decided just an hour before the electors met.
Well, and in Michigan, we've seen the false electors charged criminally.
Yeah.
Patrick, is it surprising at all we haven't seen more stories about or criminal indictments of or more focus on the actual electors, the fake electors here in Wisconsin?
So there's been no indication that I have seen that the Attorney General, Josh Call, is investigating that as a crime.
I've asked. He does not seem very interested.
I mean, we can't say he's not done an investigation because he hasn't said that either. But, you know, I think we would, when there's a criminal investigation, you start to get indications of it. And we haven't seen that. Jack Smith at the national level seems not to be going that route, though he hasn't, you know, completely closed out his investigation over the 2020 election. So I suppose it's possible. But what you're seeing is that different states are handling this differently. Michigan charged, they have 16 electors there. They charged them all with very serious felonies. I think 8 felonies each, you know, could be decades in prison if these people were convicted of all charges and given maximum sentences. Georgia, some of the electors were charged there. I think 3 of them were. Others were given immunity. And in other states, you know, Arizona's investigating, but we don't know where that's going to go. Wisconsin seems not to be doing that.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Patrick Marley, now with the Washington Post, formerly of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. That's where we met you on the beat, running around all over the place, Patrick. I want to talk about the journalism thing, and I appreciate the updates on the current events. But I'm really curious on your impressions during your career and as we stand now. You know, the technology change you mentioned. You know, people have now gotten new sources from different areas, and you know, free is always good. People like free, not necessarily accurate or quality. How do you see the siloing of information content consumption? How do you see that as affecting how news and facts are distributed throughout the society?
I mean, it's, you know, concerning that you've got, you know, it used to be years ago, you had 3 major networks, right? And people would choose whether they watched ABC or NBC. It wasn't that much different. What's great about today is you have this vast variety of things that you can choose from. What's bad about today is you have this vast variety you can choose from, because people choose, especially if they want news that has something that reflects their own point of view, they'll watch or read or hear that stuff, and they won't hear things from the other side. And it gets to the point where people cannot conceive of the idea that people who believe differently than them political have good intentions at heart. It's the other side is evil. And there's an inability to understand the other side. I think that's one of the downsides of this siloing that you see.
At the White House Correspondents' Dinner, I believe it was Roy Wood Jr. I met him, a comedian, funny guy. But his criticism, he said, you know, some of the greatest journalism in this room is happening in place behind a paywall. And I would say, you know, certainly is the case with the Journal Sentinel. We've seen the evolution of that. And every media outlet's got to have their own monetizing way of doing it. I'm in the radio business. We sell ads. But I've often thought that radio and I'm not trying to take you too far afield here, Patrick, but radio in the state of Wisconsin, I thought, had an outsized influence because we've always had slow internet in many parts of the state. Mm-hmm. And even if you have a desire and a willingness to invest in subscription media, you don't always have internet that delivers that in a timely fashion, and at least not streaming, whatever the case may be. I always felt like this electorate here in the state of Wisconsin is getting a lot of their news from talk radio, and it's free and it's always there and you can turn it on in your car. And I felt like if quote unquote the left or something other than conservative thought didn't put some free outlet out there, I always read the Post. I love the Post. I can afford a subscription to the Post. A lot of my listeners never read the Post. Cost too much money. Do you
They missed a great Labor Day sale where they could have gotten a year for $29 or 50 cents a week. I came on too late for the plug. But I hear your point. I mean, we can't all, like, look, I'd like to read all of the Ohio papers and all the Michigan papers and all of the Wisconsin papers. You know, there's also the time component, right? You can't, like, who hasn't looked at their phone and, you know, it's this bottomless well of information and you get overwhelmed. So it's like as much a time problem as a money problem. I mean, I'd love for all our stories to be free because I just want people to read what I'm writing. But, you know, they have to give me a paycheck, or at least they do if they want me to keep showing up for work.
Yeah, I know how that works.
And the model has changed because in the old days, newspapers got most of their money from ad revenue. You know, they would, the subscribers had to pay money, not insignificant amount of money, but most of their money came from ad revenue. And now advertisers, why would you go into a print newspaper, which is really expensive, when you go to the newspaper's website, target it to the readers who are clicking on certain stories and get the exact customers you want for a much smaller cost? Well, that's good for the businesses that are advertising the paper, but it's not good for the newspaper because they're making much less money and their costs haven't gone down.
Any concern amongst the, let's call you a real journalist, as contrary to Dom and I, any concern about these sort of newsrooms that are funded by political motive?
Absolutely.
We see 501c3s or whatever, and they look very newsy and they offer you lots of content, and then you realize, but it's probably driven by political agenda. Patrick, how invasive do you think that is currently?
I mean, it's a problem. It's definitely a problem to have anything that is presented as news that is not news, that's got some other motive behind it. And sometimes that's just clickbait meant to, just get you to click and get money that way. Sometimes it's something for a partisan reason. Sometimes it's super obvious. You go to the Gateway Pundit, it's like, oh, I can see these people's agenda. And sometimes you go to a site and it initially looks like it's, you know, just normal straight ahead news. And it's not until you've spent some time with it, it's like, oh, wait a minute. What is this site? Where did it come from? And, you know, people are overwhelmed. As I said before, it's hard to do your independent research every time you go to a freaking website.
Patrick, do you feel like as a journalist, and I realize there are limitations ethically, I did go through some journalism classes. Dom never did. But we are not constrained by being able to offer our opinions through the work we do here. Do you ever feel constrained as a journalist to say, well, this side said and this side said, but this guy lies through his teeth constantly. You really shouldn't believe him. He's not credible. But you can't really lay that out in every journalistic article.
So no, I don't feel constrained. You know, I'm not one that really wants to share my own opinions or let them color the work that I do. But if I am quoting two people and one of them has a history of lying through their teeth, I just tell the readers that, right? Like if you lie to me, I'm going to either not quote your lie or I'm going to quote your lie and tell my readers that it's a lie. So, you know, we have a duty to not just prevent Democrats said this, Republicans said that, and you decide. We do want you to decide, but we want to give you full context and all the information. So, you know, if we're going to talk about recusal rules with the Supreme Court, it's important to say suddenly everyone's views have changed on recusal rules. And that goes from the right, which has said nobody should ever have any say, you have a duty to sit, to all of a sudden like, boy, I don't know if this justice can sit in this case. And simultaneously on the left, them saying we need this really hard and fast recusal rules, this really high standard, objective way of looking at it. People need to get out of the way. If there's even an impression of possible conflict to, well, I don't know, we have a duty to sit. You got to hear the case. it doesn't look like a problem to me.
Patrick Barley from the Washington Post. Great radio show or greatest radio show ever.
This sounds like a trap.
More Devils, we'll be back.
Thank you, Patrick.
Experience Nightlight, September 8th and 9th from 5 until 10:30 p.m. Presented by Joy Engine. The dazzling spectacle is an immersive 4D light festival taking place in Milwaukee's historic Mitchell Street neighborhood. Digital animations, dance, music, art, and fashion combine to create a visual, family-friendly sensory experience outside of 710 West Historic Mitchell Street, home of Mitchell Street Arts. The event is family-friendly and free to the public. Don't miss this iconic event. Nightlight, where art comes to life. Information at joyengine.org.
Vega.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. Partly cloudy tonight with lows around 43. Winds out of the northeast, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Sunny skies and calm tomorrow, high of 73. Lows dip down to about 51 tomorrow night, mainly clear skies. Upper 70s Saturday with a chance for scattered storms. Turning much cooler Sunday with highs in the upper 60s and scattered showers possible. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air, WLAK, 1260 AM. Right now, 62.
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. 12:15, Town Call. 1 p.m., The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn directs WLAK.
The Devil's Advocates know how to kick ass and chew bubblegum, and we're all out of bubblegum.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, our last segment of the day. So if you got something to say, hit us up right now at 844-967-2789.
I think I was overindulging with Patrick Marley there. we were trading war stories, you know? It's good to see a fellow journalist.
Fellow journalist. Yeah.
Now that he's not here to correct me, I'm going to call myself a fellow journalist with Patrick Marley.
Yeah, your journalist hat on now here. I thought you were just a talking head.
Well, he's with the Washington Post, and I'm with the Madison Bureau of the Devil's Advocates. great to see Patrick Marley. I was telling him, he asked me, what about Ron Johnson? When's the last time you guys had him on? I said, it's been a while. And I told him the story about the off the record with Ron. And his team wanted to have an off the record with
welcome
me
like back.
12 days before the election. So I tell them the story, you know, I'm meeting Ron, and Ron, you want to talk to me? No, not really.
No, not really.
And then the whole off the record, which I would keep confidential if it was actually anything meaningful, but the off the record was effectively Ron trying to reinvite himself on the greatest radio show ever. And so far our attitude is, don't call us. Don't call us. We'll call you. And perhaps we will someday, Dom. Perhaps.
Perhaps someday you will. I won't.
Oh, that's right. You're going to be absent that one day. Yeah. I think I know when I'm going to book Ron Johnson.
That's right.
I'll have to find out if he's in the district. Well, you can play right now. We still got time for your phone calls. 844-967-2789. Mark from the SAC, always a patient man. Mark, welcome back. What do you got for us?
Hey, Mark.
Well, you should have not. Don't call us. We'll call you as a music bump when you just said that. it's ridiculous. And congratulations on keeping CJ on topic. And he just hated that you were expecting him to stay on topic.
Can I come and disrupt your radio show with whatever random thing I read on Fox News Digital today?
And if you don't let me, you're violating my freedom of speech.
I point out to CJ that you should actually read the Constitution of the state of Wisconsin, where it says compact, contiguous, and that it's
so
the Supreme
words.
Court that decides whether things are constitutional. But let's remember that Brian Hagedorn actually helped Scott, was participating when Scott Walker drew up those original corrupt maps back in 2011, I believe, that he was a legal advisor in that whole process.
One must presume his chief legal counsel helped craft in some way, shape, or form, but we don't know that. We don't know. I'm sure he'd be nothing but honest in his own decision to, oh, he didn't recuse the last time.
Well, they did, and they farmed it out to a law firm, right? And they had to go off-site and look at a secret room to see their district maps. I mean, so what? I mean, there was a,
but it wasn't,
was a firm. It wasn't him.
It wasn't. Wait. The maps in question would not have been the maps drawn or assisted by Hagedorn, because the maps that came before the court when Hagedorn was on the court are the newest round of maps that were just least changed from the terrible baked in the cake. Right. Hagedorn perhaps influenced Scott Walker signed maps from a decade ago.
And it was interesting, a program I heard earlier today is apparently that Annette Ziegler, 11 times she violated the code of ethics when she judged on cases that her husband's bank was a party to, that well, she should have actually recused herself, because there actually is recusal rules for some of the lower courts. So, I mean, that this nonsense of corruption in office, I mean, by those standards, Annette Ziegler came into the Supreme Court corrupted.
Well,
I mean,
so did Gableman. The ads that helped him win the campaign were blatantly racist and unethical and untrue. And, of course, there was no one to basically say, you're bad and you shouldn't do that, Gableman. You need to serve a penalty, because, of course, they get to judge themselves on the Supreme Court. It's so ridiculous. 844-967-2789. Ridiculi. What's the
plural? So many ridiculousness. So much ridiculousness. Some redemption, perhaps, today. Crudy of The Hill reporting. Peter Navarro, he's a former Trump economic advisor.
Redemption in his guilty.
Contempt of Congress following a jury deliberation that lasted nearly 5 hours.
Yeah, Navarro, but they let the jury deliberate outside recess, and apparently his lawyer has already said they might have seen some protester signs, so they've been influenced. We've got to appeal.
Yes, that is also true, Crudy. Let me pull that one up as well. Navarro claims mistrial. It's a mistrial after ex-Trump advisor is convicted. Here's the story. Stanley Woodward, he represents Navarro in his contempt of Congress case, claimed that the jurors who deliberated for nearly 5 hours before reaching their verdict went outside during their break and were exposed to protesters with signs related to the January 6th riot. However, prosecutors claimed they did not see any protesters outside the exit used by the jurors, and the presiding judge said he would not rule on the mistrial request until the defense provided him with video or photo evidence. Navarro convicted on two counts of contempt of Congress for refusing to comply with a subpoena from the White House committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol. The former Trump advisor argued that he was prevented from producing documents and appearing for a deposition as requested by the committee because Trump invoked executive privilege. However, the judge barred Navarro's attorneys from using the executive argument at trial, finding that they had failed to prove that the former president formally invoked the executive privilege. Navarro is the second Trump ally to face contempt of Congress charges after former White House advisor Steve Bannon was similarly convicted of two counts of contempt earlier this year. I mean, they're desperate. They're so desperate. Oh, my God. There are people outside. They went outside. There's protesters outside. Well, if they're outside and they're outside, they're probably outside together. Oh, my God, mistrial. Yeah, I mean, we'll see. If that were to be the case, then the judge will make that determination. But they're just desperate.
Margaret from Cottage Grove, you'll have the last say today. What is it?
Hi, Margaret.
Hi. I was thinking that I saw a report a few months back that Robin Voss, in a private group meeting, said that he was embarrassed to be a UW graduate. How then can he, in good faith, vote on funding for UW?
Are you suggesting the Speaker of the Assembly should recuse from all votes on the UW system due to his prejudgment of the system?
Or should he be impeached?
Yes.
Okay, I'm reading this right. That's what
Margaret, thank you for your contribution. We appreciate when people play along. Friday's going to be the best of all because we're going into a big kickoff weekend for the Packers. We got Mike Clemens joining us, our own sports director here at Civic Media in the 5 o'clock hour. You're all going to join us. You're all going to listen, not just us, but also to Maggie Dawn, raised in the Wisco, and Rick Smith. Keep it locked right here, Civic Media. I know you will. Guilty.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
You're listening to WLAK 1260 AM Amory and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward.
Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
I'm